When you hear classical French cuisine, what do you think? Expensive, difficult, out of style or out of touch? Impossible? My students seemed to dread classical French class. At culinary school, it should be, and it was, difficult and challenging. But if I tell you that classical French cooking is simply the principles of sound cooking, that seems a bit more accessible. This is the first in a series of episodes I want to make about getting to the heart of simple sound cooking. It can be challenging, but it isn't impossible. Shooting free throws in a playoff game with your eyes closed isn't impossible. It just takes a lot of practice and repetition. The Culinary Libertarian Podcast, episode 174. Hello, folks. Dan Reed here, the Culinary Libertarian. Welcome back to the podcast. Happy to have you here. Happy to be here. The show is back. That's the good news. The bad news is I can't use Zencaster with my current rig. For this episode, I used Zoom and recorded both video and audio, the video for a soon-to-be bonus content. And I think for that, the audio suffered a bit. This is the first in more episodes where I get into the main text of classical French cooking, Escoffier's La Guide Culinaire. I set a high bar when I taught it, and I think that I was right. Standards should be high, as well as expectations. But the basics of sound cooking, which is what this is, are attainable and are worth pursuing. So I wanted to try something I had talked about, which is doing more content about cooking, but also making some Patreon content. So this is kind of a combination of both of those ideas, and we'll see how this goes. What I want to do is read a little bit from Escoffier, La Guide Culinaire, and I'm doing video of this too, which will be on the Patreon. You can't really tell, but here it is. It's a well used, well read, well marked book. Even though Escoffier would be the best of the best, call him, say, if you're a basketball fan, he's Magic, he's Jordan, he's Larry Bird. If you're a golfer, he's Jack Nicklaus. If he's a painter, he's Michelangelo. He's just that good. But one of the things that all crafts folks have in common is a commitment to a skill, and they all started with nothing. It was a point in time when Michael Jordan couldn't play basketball. He got good fast, probably. So there's basics, there's fundamentals, and for excellence to take hold, for Magic to be able to do Showtime, the no-look pass, and things that were almost like Mike, just man, whether you like the Lakers and Magic or not, he and Larry together really lit the league on fire. But Magic made basketball fun to watch. It was exciting. So
he took fundamentals and really excelled and pushed beyond the basics. But I think there's an argument that can be made that you can't do those things without some basic understanding of principles, fundamentals. And that's what Escoffier is talking about. He's taking these basic fundamentals, these principles of sound cooking, and then making, well, because he's cooking for the king, he's making pretty elaborate stuff. And not all of us have access to truffles, and not all of us make beef stock at home. We don't all have access to the best produce, to the best game, the best meat. And it's easy. And frankly, I think it's a fairly common reaction amongst cooks and maybe people who think they know what's going on to say that, well, I can't cook classical French food because I don't have the money for it. It's not altogether an unfounded complaint, but it's a misinformed complaint, because not everything in this book is foie gras and truffles and demi-glaze and the best cuts of steak. There's a dish in here called Chicken Maryland. Now, I'm not going to find it just now. I might save this. In fact, what I'll do is I'm going to save it for the Patreon bonus stuff, and we'll go over what Chicken Maryland is. But I'm going to tell you, it's fried chicken. So to say that you can't cook classical French cuisine because you don't have the things you need is to say that you don't know anything about French cuisine, classical French cuisine, and you don't know what the things are that you need. And there is a distinction between classical French, which is what Escoffier is talking about, and classic French, which is, well, I was going to say like classic American, but that's kind of tough, because that's actually a good episode. It's an entirely different conversation. But so if you, and all the same thing applies in France, because the different wine regions are going to have different foods. But a pot-au-feu, a just beef, it's more than that, but it's basically boiled beef dinner. It's just they do it a little bit fancier. Or coq au vin, which is a tough old chicken marinated in red wine for a couple of days, and then you make a stew out of it, a blanquette de veau. There's some stuff that's just what grandma makes, just grandma French, not grandma American. And we have, Americans and regions have their own things, and this is getting too far afield. But to say that you can't make fried chicken is to not understand what classical French cooking is in its total. To say that you can't make tortellini rossini because you can't afford beef tenderloin and truffles and beef stock and foie gras. Yeah, I accept that. that's hard. Making consomme, boy, man. A well-made consomme, holy moly. It's worth tasting. It's a lot of effort to make at home, but if you had a place that serves consommé, get it. It's hard to explain. It's probably impossible to explain how a translucent liquid can have such an astonishing amount of flavor in such a small quantity. A teaspoon of soup is just an explosion. It's not even the right word. It's the essence of the thing. Chicken or fish or beef consomme done right. Great stuff. So the purpose then of starting what's probably going to be a series of these is to, well, since I like working movie quotes into everything, this is kind of like Inigo Montoya. When the job goes bad, you go back to the beginning. So we're going back to the beginning. Basics. Go back to where it starts. So for athletes, go back to the basics, your training. What are the fundamentals of basketball, baseball, soccer, football? What are the fundamentals of cooking? So I'm going to read a few paragraphs, maybe jump ahead a little bit, and then we'll go over some of how that idea, the distinction she's making, we can apply to our days of going to the grocery store. And hey, if there's anything left, what do we do? So chapter one, sauces. This book is written for all who practice the art of cookery, but nevertheless, at the very outset, it is felt necessary to say something about the basic culinary preparations which play such an important part in the work of the kitchen. These culinary preparations define the basic fundamentals and the requisite ingredients without which nothing of importance can be attempted. It is for this reason that they are so important and why they occupy such a place in the work of the cook who wishes to be successful. It is not sufficient merely to have the desire to do well, nor even to possess the necessary skills for making these basic preparations to which constant recourse has to be made. The means to create these basic preparations must also be present, and they must be provided for the cook by placing at his disposal everything required in the way of commodities for the best possible quality. All right, so one of the real big challenges for the home cook is that phrase, best possible. And I got a itchy up there. It can kind of mess with your head. And I've complained on this show at least once or twice about some of the cooking magazines. And in particular, the one I remember is Condé Nast. I'm not even sure if they're still around. It, as a magazine, it was amazing how it had spectacular photographs, people, reporters, whatever, journalists, writers going maybe already there at all corners of the world. No, the earth isn't flat. Writing about the food on this block, in this town, in this province of Italy. And as amazing as it sounds, it for a cook, this cook in Naples, Florida, well, I wasn't in Italy. So whatever little herb is growing through the cracks of the sidewalk on that particular block in Rome in May, so what? What do I care? I'm in Naples, Florida, and we don't have that. The article, of course, would say that the only way to do this particular dish justice is to get this particular rare thing that only grows in this one spot in the whole world. And if you don't get it, well, then you may as well not even make the dish. That's not what they said, but that's an easy takeaway. And so if I can't get the best, everything else is obviously inferior. So I'm making inferior food. It's convoluted thinking, but it isn't uncommon in the thought process of young cooks. If I can't get white truffles in October, then what's the point of making the dish? Well, I can't help you with that. It's worth getting them, but they're expensive, so you probably won't. But it's worth making the dish because there's a skill needed for the rest of the dish that has nothing to do with whether or not you have any truffles of any kind. And learning the skill, getting those I think the and various people would say getting your reps in is the reason to do it. So what he's saying, so the best possible quality is fresh. Is the ingredient fresh? If it's not, you know, fresh is easy to decide. If it's not wilted produce and if it's wholesome smelling meat, then it's fresh. Could it be fresher? Probably. Is it worth fussing about that because it's a day fresher over there? You didn't go to the farm and get it. You didn't watch the chicken get slaughtered. I mean, that's being the guy who used to go through those mental gymnastics. I understand that, but I also recognize at the advanced age of this that it's an easy barrier to put up to not do something, and you're not really learning anything, even for yourself. Never mind what who you're feeding. It's a barrier, and so classical French cuisine, maybe Escoffier didn't have the problem, although probably he did. Things go bad. What did he do? Who knows? Do we have to sometimes, when we go to the store, especially now with supply chain problems, we want to get Delmonico's. Well, they don't have Delmonico's. What do we got? We got Chuck and we got short ribs. Neither one of those is a Delmonico, and there's no New York to be had, which is kind of on the same long piece of meat. So what do? For the dish you want, that's not the meat you need, but if it's fresh and it looks good, and see, that's the thing. If, wow, those short ribs look great. Well, let's change your mind, make a different dish so that we make the best thing we can make with those short ribs. And boy, howdy, I'm telling you, good short ribs, that's worth making. So let me go back in a little bit more here, because I think there's some more stuff to go off of. However, profligate extravagance is as bad as a restrictive economy, which puts the brake on the full extent of the talents of a cook, causing the conscientious worker to become discouraged and even leading directly to failure. Part of that failure is mental failure, failure to see other solutions. The most skilled cook in the world cannot attempt anything if given nothing, and it would be totally inconsistent to expect him to produce work of a high standard from imperfect or insufficient ingredients. The most important point concerning these basic culinary preparations is that it is necessary to provide everything needed as regards quantity and quality. So, if you don't have the Delmonico, you're not having a Delmonico for dinner. It can be either seen as a failure, so you can't have that dish. So, what's the solution? Don't eat. Solution is you plan B. The point he's making is to. So if you want to make Tornado's Rossini and you don't have foie gras, you're not making Tornado's Rossini. If you don't make Tornado's Rossini and you don't have Tornado's, you're not making Tornado's Rossini. To do the things you want to do, you need the ingredients to do them, is the point. That seems sort of self-evident. But if you don't have them, in the king's kitchen, maybe you got them. Who knows? But for the rest of us, who and happens in restaurants. Even I remember working at a restaurant in New York City when scallops was on the menu. We had scallop orders on the board. No scallops. The guy was on the way. Got stuck in traffic. It was 7 o'clock when the guy showed up. So. I don't remember how the chef handled the problem by telling the diners, you know, well, we're waiting. He's in the van. He's coming. So when the guy got there, Now, this was a New York City restaurant that could afford literally the best, and he got it. Scallops sometimes come in what looks like paint cans of some like bronze looking but cheap metal. So the chef opened the can, pulled out a big called diver scallop, cut it in half through the across the grain, and so the scallop, if you know the giant shells, the scallop is the muscle that holds the shells together. And there's a bunch of other junk around there in the row and parts you don't want to eat, but it's just the muscle that keeps the shell tight together. So you carefully cut the muscle off of both shells, and there's the scallop. So this is a big one, probably that big around, 2 inches around, and maybe an inch and a half thick. He cut it in half, and it jiggled. It moved. It was still convulsing. That's fresh scallops. Can you get that in the grocery store? No. Can you hope to get that in the grocery store? Absolutely not. Never in 1,000 years will that happen. So that doesn't mean don't have scallops. But that was cool. So Scott Fee is writing about restaurant cooks. We can take that information and translate it and interpret it, wrong word, interpret it for home cooks who are going to go shopping at the store where just, you know, 8 miles or whatever, hundreds of shelf feet of stuff waiting for us to go pick it. Doesn't make it bad. It's just different. And that, you know, that access to that fresh of scallops, fish is the same way. When we were in Tallahassee and I talked to Matt from Southern Seafood, when you get fish cut a couple of hours ago, if you handle fish a lot, you can tell. And I like cutting fish. It's one of my favorite things to do in the kitchen was just push all the fish. It's a very zen thing to do. It's very repetitive, but there's a calmingness to that I really miss. But getting fresh fish, that's nice. And if you have a fishmonger near you, well, then you probably know what that means, is getting fresh fish versus the frozen fish. Even the frozen stuff, as long as it is handled well and thawed properly and taken care of before it's cooked, you can still get a quality product out of it. Cat just sneezed. To expect everything to have been picked or butchered or harvested 5 minutes ago, that's an expectation that's going to lead to failure on several levels, including first the mental failure of adapting to your situation. So Scott Vea continues, understandably, what is possible in one establishment may not be possible in another, and the means fashion the end. The type of work is determined by the requirements of the guest, and the means of producing this work is naturally determined by his requirements. Everything is relative, but there is a standard which must not be deviated from, especially with reference to the basic culinary preparations. The person in charge of an establishment who allows any exception to this and who adheres too strictly to the hard and fast rule of economy taken to its utmost limit, where it becomes incompatible with the order of conduct of a good kitchen, forfeits the right to criticize the person who has put in charge of running his kitchen. If he does this, you should realize that such criticisms are untenable and unjust, and he should understand that it is just as impossible to produce first-class results from imperfect or insufficient commodities as it is absurd to expect that a second-rate draft wine, by being put in a bottle, will transform into a great wine. All right. Obviously, putting PBR into a Grolsch bottle doesn't make PBR Grolsch. And if you don't like Grolsch, you get the reference anyway. Putting Beaujolais Nouveau into in a bottle from a 1975 Lafite Rothschild doesn't make it a 1975 Bordeaux. Escoffier is a little bit, he's right to say that you can't transform something into something it isn't, but he sounds like he's making a judgment that the draft wine is to be avoided. And I disagree with that assertion if that's the one being made. And I'm not convinced that's what he's saying. I think what he's really saying is to borrow grandma's phrase, you can't turn a sow's ear into a silk purse. Things are what they are. Recognize that that's what you have. And because that's what you have doesn't mean automatically that the finished result will be inferior. To say that a draft wine isn't as good as a 1975 Lafite Rothschild is to say that Michael Jordan's a better basketball player than I am. Duh. But that's not an accurate or fair or reasonable comparison. Compare MJ to Bird or to Magic or even that other guy who's the other Laker that I don't remember his name. That's at least a fair comparison, even though opinions will change. So principle, sound cooking principles, which all, so Escoffier, he numbered his recipes. So it starts with recipe one, which we're going to maybe get to here just in a little bit, all the way up through four. There we go. 5012. Now that's not all food. Some of it is cocktails. Some of it is soups, sauces, shellfish. Some of them are vegetable dishes. There are sides. So, but every procedure was given a number. So there's over 5,000 procedures in this book. There aren't 5,000 principles. There's precious few fundamentals and principles. And when you get to the meat, when we get to the meat section, the proper cooking of meat is the same for all however many hundreds of meat recipes there are. Same thing for vegetables, same thing for stock, same thing for soups. And we're going to go, there's a wide variety of soups, but there are principles that apply to just those things. And depending on what you have, we'll stick with a draft wine versus the 1975 Lafite Rothschild. Wine still needs to be aerated, needs a chance to breathe, it needs to be taken. You take it in the glass and you spin it to let the air into it. It doesn't, because it's not a $10,000 bottle of wine, doesn't mean it's an inferior bottle of wine for you or the dish. Compared to it, it probably is, but that's not fair to the wine. It's not fair to you. It's not fair to the thinking that goes into how do you approach, what's your mindset going into this procedure. And I guess all this, the lead to this article, to my episode here, is all ingredients deserve the same care and treatment for basic sound cooking fundamentals to get out of them all that they have to offer. That's it. And it doesn't matter what those ingredients are. It doesn't matter if it's the chuck or the short ribs or the damanaco or the tenderloin or the rump roast or the asabuco, the shank. They all have different needs for cooking, but all of those cooking procedures have basic sound fundamentals. And if you follow them for the thing you're cooking, vegetables, fish, chicken, liver, beef, veal, turkey, eel, you will make a good dish. So there's, he's got some basic principle preparations. I'm going to avoid getting into the preparation part here. It's kind of challenging reading it. It's going to be nearly impossible just listening. So let me move on a little bit here to the sauce part. Sauces represent one of the most important components of cookery. It is they that have inspired and sustained the universal predominance of the French cuisine. It is therefore impossible to devote too much care and attention to their preparation. Now, I'm going to pause here and say that what he says about French contribution to sauces is absolutely correct. However, if you know anything about your food history, Catherine de Medici married into France and taught the French how to cook. So the French don't like hearing that, but it's true. The Italians were better cooks than the French, but the French ended up making this codification of sauce procedures, and the sauce was really the thing that put France on the map culinarily and gustatorily. Now, there's a whole lot of room in there for opinion and argument, and that's fine. Send me an email. But I don't think it's incorrect what he said. The basic component used in the production of sauces is a stock or gravy. It can be brown stock or estouffade for making brown sauces, or clear gravy or white stock for making veloutés. It is to the production of perfect stocks that the sauce cook should devote himself. The sauce cook who is, as the Marquis de Cussy remarked, the enlightened chemist, the creative genius, and the cornerstone of the edifice of superlative cooking. Well, that's a lot. Stock. So we're going to switch all of our metaphors and go to a builder. I don't know a damn thing about building, but I know a few things. At least I think I know a few things. One of them is that for any building to stand, it needs a solid foundation. And the Leaning Tower of Pisa is probably the best famous worldwide example of what happens if your foundation isn't sound. Stock. So what? Okay, we're not talking finance. A stock is now they call it bone broth. It's the same thing. A stock is a liquid made from the bones of the animal with some aromatics, which does include vegetables, usually carrots, celery, onions, leeks. Could have parsnips, depending on the thing and the intended final use. It could have fennel, and then it has some herbs and spices, black peppercorns, maybe garlics and bay leaves, possibly thyme. Depending on what you know is going to be the final use, you can add other things to it. But the bones have a lot of flavor in them, but they also have something called collagen, which turns to gelatin in the presence of water and heat. And as it cools, you may have seen sometimes if you've ever made split pea soup with the ham bone inside, and then you refrigerate it and it gets all congealed. Well, one of the reasons it did that is all the starch from the peas. The other reason it did that is some of the collagen that came out of the ham hock or the ham bone. That wiggly jiggly jello looking stock It's a moment of pride for the saucier. Really, it's a job done well. It's a visual proof that I did my job the right way. I made chicken stock the other day that was just as jello as can be, and I was just giddy about it. We'll cover maybe in the next episode, next one I do of these for the Patreon, we'll go into how to make stock. Because it's one, if you buy pork butt and there isn't usually what you're going to get is if you get, well, so pork butt, it's a funny word. What does that mean? It's not actually the butt at all. It's the shoulder. If pigs were cows, it would be the chuck. Sometimes there's a shoulder blade piece in that big hunk of meat, and it's not much you can do with that, but don't throw it away. Add it to your chickens, add it to your beef, add it to something. In here, he uses pork in his tomato sauce. I know. They weren't vegetarians. If you are a whole chicken buyer, and you roast a whole chicken and you have these bones, don't throw them away. Save them in the freezer. Get enough of them or some pork bones and make stock. Even from roast chicken bones, you're going to get something out of that. And part of the reason for doing that is, A, you now can make a soup from that and extend. So whatever your purchase cost was for that whole chicken or that rotisserie chicken, yeah, that works too. Save the bones, make a stock. Now you make a soup. Now we have another meal. So you've extended your cost into something else, and you're not getting your free meal exactly, but you're getting another meal for what you paid, and that's always a good thing. So stocks to make soups, stocks to make sauces. Most of us don't make sauces at home unless we're having a big party. And generally what we're going to make is something called a bechamel, which is a milk-based sauce thickened with a roux. It has onion and clove and bay leaf as an accent for flavor, a little bit of nutmeg in there. Once you have that finished bechamel, you can use that on your lasagnas. You can turn that into a bunch of other kinds of sauces, like mornay, which is cheese sauce, soubise, which is it's good and so good. Lots of sweated cooked down onions, no color, not caramelized, but cooked down to the point where they're just translucent and all they are now is sweet. Man, it's kind of challenging, but man, is it good. Stocks and then sauces, the mother sauce, we'll get into the mother sauces. I did a whole episode on that. I'll put that. I don't know what episode it was. I'll put the mother sauce episode link on the show notes page. And there's a few other episodes that are relevant to this content, and I'm going to add some stuff to the bonus part, which will be on the Patreon, link to that in the show notes page. And I think that's going to do it for now, because that's a lot. So have a good week, everybody. Hope we're getting off to a good year. We'll see how it goes. Prep, plan, and prepare your yard for your garden. It's going to be a good gardening year. I'm going to need to do it. And so we can talk about that too. All right, that's it. All right, folks, that's going to do it. I mentioned bonus content. As I see it now, it will be a video of this episode with, the audio, as well as some extra content that was not part of this episode. Right now, I think it's going to be a discussion about the procedure of making consommé in addition to the chicken Maryland, which for you playing at home is recipe number 3159. I'm also updating the blog and adding a jump to recipe button to the recipe pages. There are many, and I'm going in order of the most frequented pages first, and that is the garlic sausage recipe and the chocolate donuts recipe. Yeah, chocolate donuts.
Making stock is, as mentioned, key to the success of soups and sauces. If you can't make them, but want to trust the product, use Brodo stocks. Brodo makes stocks the way I would, which means you know they will work. Feel good about what you feed your family with Brodo stocks. Visit culinarylibertarian.com/Brodo to see my offer to you, as well as to find the link for Brodo. Have a good week, eat hearty, and I'll see you soon.